Low quality fans of a high quality Bruins franchise. Welcome back. Thank you for your patience. I hope everyone's had a fantastic summer so far. It has been hot, very, very hot everywhere. So that's not concerning at all. It's the summer. It's supposed to be hot. It's fine. We are, in this video, as the title says, going to be ranking the Bruins at every single position versus every other franchise across the league. So, to put it in layman's terms, we are going to take our top line center, our projected top line center, and compare him to the other 31 projected top line centers across the league. Now, I need to explain how this is going to work, or else you're going to be very confused. So if you could stick with me for a minute before you start looking at the timestamps below and jumping to different players, just with me for a moment. What I did to make this fair, because I can't predict the rosters for 31 franchises, especially I can barely predict what the Bruins are going to roll out game one. So I thought the only way to make this truly fair was to go to a site that has projected lineups across the league and utilize them as my comparison. Puckpedia was the easiest way to do this. Plus, they're very informative, right? They're a pretty good base for this. To be clear, these lines will likely be wrong as for day one starters for everything. Across every team, there's going to be little changes, and it's impossible to project the effect that prospects are going to have in their camps. This is not a Bible of these are the rankings, right? This is a where we are just about in comparison to what teams have. You know, this is something to be used more as a tool rather than a definitive answer. So we're using Puckpedia's expected lineups. The only changes I had to make is they take you out of their lineup, out of their depth chart, if you have an injury. So I had to the best of my abilities, project where those injured players would play. Largely just looking at where they played last year and going from there. I am attempting to ignore everything other than on-ice impact, meaning contract size, age, who they play with, all things I did my best to ignore. I want to know where the Bruins rank on impact players at their positions, right? Comparing as best I can apples to apples. Point totals obviously play a role, but you'll see that some players will be valued higher despite a lower point total because of how they affect the game around them and vice versa. I did not rank specifically where every player across the league ranks at their position. Meaning, I'm not going to provide you this is 1 through 32 of our top left wingers in the league. To do this, put them into tiers, found where my guy was, compared him to the guys close to him, and then that's where he placed, right? It was the only fair way to do it because I watch many of these players somewhere between 6 and 10 times a year, and then I watch the Bruins somewhere between 82 and 108 times. I don't know. Like, it's just a lot more watching of hockey, right? Also, I thought it would just be ridiculous to you sit there and get hung up on why is this guy 13th and this guy 17th, and you're like, it's so small of a difference between these groupings, so like, don't get too worked up about it. So this is how we designed it. I am going to post the players by team. That's the order we're going with in each section. So that way you know who they're being compared to. You are going to see that some of them have some very unique listings of who's being considered there. Puckpedia has a couple real outliers in which you go, that guy's a top liner, but he's being compared to like second and third liners right now. It's just the way they did it. I felt like it evened out in the wash, you know? So that explanation has to be there, else you would just sit there and go like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know why these guys are where they are. I think it was the only way to keep it fair across the league. Like, comment, subscribe. Nailed it. Anything you want to tell me in the comments, let me know if there's things that you're looking for this season. And then strap in. This is a long form video. I hope it gives you a source of entertainment for a little while. And we are going to get started in a very entertaining fashion, because I want to start with our centers. The Bruins, over the past few years, have been loudly lacking center depth. And I was really curious where we would land as far as more so our middle six, because we know we don't have a top line center. Now, Puckpedia, for our top line center, has our candidate as Elias Lindholm. And while many people think that is ridiculous, you'd probably be incorrect, because game one, if he's healthy, They're probably putting him there just to start the season. Last year in 69 games played, nice. He had 17 goals, 31 assists, 48 points, a minus 7 plus minus. He won 56.1% of his draws, which is awesome. He makes 7.75 mil for 5 more years. Now, all of these 5 more years, this includes this upcoming season. The closest in the rankings to his name, Dylan Strom, Backlund, and Dvorak. So you can, I'm telling you right now, you probably have a guess as where Elias Lindholm places. But it's not 32nd. It's 31st! Not last! One of the things I was most curious about when I started this project was how unfair I am to the current roster. For all the Elias frustration that I put out in the world, am I being fair when comparing him to who he's supposed to be competing against, right? I did everything I could to put on some black and gold colored glasses and support our guy in these rankings. I wanted to have to defend his 19th, right? I wanted to have to do that and get yelled at in the comments about it. Backlund is the only player I have ranking below Elias. Backlund has lower point totals, only broke even on faceoffs last year, and doesn't make a significant impact on special teams. Dvorak was close, as he has less points per game, but he does way more at even strength than Elias does. I knew this ranking would be bad. I didn't think it would be 31st. I genuinely thought I could find a way to get him 24th, 25th. I won't do it. This is as stinky as it truly has sounded through the year. This is gross. The good news is, you don't expect Elias to be our top line center all year, right? You sure hope not. And while no one who replaces him this year will be a true top line center yet, they might be closer to fit that bill than he is right now. I wanted to get him higher. I'm sorry. 31st is the best I could do. Tough start. Now we're going position by position, so we are going to jump right to the second line centers rather than just do top line. I think it'll be more fun because there's some positives along the way. Some negatives too. Second line center. Our candidate, Pavel Zacha. 30 goals, 35 assists for 65 points in 78 games played. What a season. A plus 4, plus minus, 53.3% faceoff wins, which actually kind of surprised me. I forgot he was that solid. 4.75 mil for 1 more year. Obviously, tons of talk about if he's going to be a Bruin next month, let alone at the trade deadline. The closest in the rankings for me, McLeod, Rossi, Hartman. Rossi's more kind of like a projection, I think, than anything. Final ranking, I am 13th at second line center. This was surprising to me. I expected to want to put him close to the top 10. Now we obviously didn't quite get there, but I'm pretty happy with him realistically ending up at 13. That's an upper half of the league second line center on a team where you really wonder if you have any centers that really belong where they've been playing. The names close to where Zacha plays, McLeod, Rossi, and Hartman, are the closest in value at 2C to me, but all of them still sit behind Zacha. He's ahead of all three of those, largely due to the significant difference in offensive production, again, largely from this previous year. But directly ahead of Zacha are names like Cooley, who I expect to take another leap next year, Miller, who, when healthy, I think affects the game at a higher level across the board. Carlson, who, just like Miller, just affects the game in more areas than Zacha does. I think it would be fairly easy to make the argument that he belongs anywhere from 10th to 15th. Like, you could really get in there. But Zacha becoming an upper half of the league second line center is just a reminder how impactful he has been. And what a great trade that was. Haula, 1-for-1. Not bad. It's easy to talk about trading this guy, but when you really dig into it and compare him to who else is at that position, I mean, you can see why they want to keep him and extend him so badly. Not to mention, he plays anywhere in the top 9 and you're still happy, right? He's just a professional. But for him to be a bona fide 2C in the NHL, I don't think I was considering him in that way through the year, and I think I have to start. He really does a great job when compared to other players at his position. So I think we need more Pavel Zacha respect, frankly. That being said, I'm not going to say you're wrong if you still want him traded, because it feels like you should still get a lot for a guy like that. Like a lot. Enough that everyone goes sticker shock, but if you're a Bruins fan, you're going to understand why he's that valuable. Third line center. Our candidate, Frazier Minton. Do I love some Frazier Minton? 82 games played, 17 goals, 18 assists for 35 points, a plus 21. 49.3% face-off win percentage. That's going to have to increase. $879,000 per year. This is last year of that, though. He's on his last year with ELC. He is an RFA next summer. We should expect them to push very hard to re-sign him before he reaches that, because if we think, if we're right about what we think he could be, you're going to want to get him signed sooner rather than later. He's not going to Leo Carlson $18 million or anything like that, but if he transforms into a real second-line center this year, which, you know, it's a little optimistic, but I don't think it's that crazy. That bill gets bigger and bigger with every passing week. Something that, frankly, you're just rooting for, right? I'd rather have to pay the guy because he's good than sit there and go, oh, gosh, what are we doing? I'm, like, going back and checking. Yeah, plus 21. I thought that was a typo for a second. Holy crap. That guy, whew. Closest in the rankings, I have Boone Jenner, Ben Kindle, Hayton, and Lowry. Final ranking, 13th at third line center. I was shocked here. The competition at third C is not the stiffest, but there's a couple things I really like about Minton's profile when comparing him to others. Many 3Cs are very good on one side of the puck and pretty bad on the other. Minton thrives defensively, but he's far from a black hole offensively. Plus, out of the 12 players that rank ahead of him, only a couple are still developing. It just points to Minton either becoming a guy who you could have as a 3C on a championship contending team, which we've talked about all of last year, how I just really value what he brings, the guy that belongs on a championship contender, especially at this age. Or he's a guy who could legitimately develop into a long-term second-line center. That's very much in the cards. Now, again, maybe it's a little bit of optimism in there, but the way he's developing, you're glad you have him on your team. Like, you definitely don't want to get rid of him. I'll tell you that much. Jenner and Kindle rank just above him, Hayton and Lowry just below. Despite the abysmal ranking of our first line center, I'm not going to name the guy again, it'd just be rude, Elias. The middle six does not have a center issue. It just doesn't. Going into the season, if Zacha and Minton are here and they're healthy, those are reasonable middle six guys, the middle six centers on any team. Now, it's not in a sense of, wow, you have a tremendous strength down the middle. If we somehow, somewhere, got a 1C, though, yeah, that's now strength down the middle. That legitimately is, especially if Minton develops past Zacha. And now you have Zacha moving down a line, Minton, yeah, that would be, that's what we're looking for right there. But 13th and 13th for your middle six guys, middle six centers, I'm very happy with that. And the fourth line center really didn't do that badly either. You guys are going to be, you're going to kill me. This is fourth line center, and our candidate is Sean Corrali. I'm going to tell you, our fourth line right wing candidate is Kastelic. Kastelic ranks so much farther behind his contemporaries than Sean Corrali that I almost stopped doing the project. I almost just dropped it right there, but I already sunk hours and hours into it. I also have a spreadsheet right now of whatever 32 times 20 is, 640. That's very easy math. I don't know why that took me a second. 640 players. So I was already really well into it, but we'll get there. Just shocked is all I'm saying. Sean Corrali, 82 games played, 12 goals, 10 assists, 22 points for plus six, 51.1% faceoff win percentage, one more year at 1.85 mil. Closest to the rankings, Cizikas, Freddie Gaudreau, Nick Cousins. Final ranking, 17th. Now, it's on the back half of the league, but just barely. Honestly, though, it was another surprise. Cousins and Cizikas rank just above him. Freddie Gaudreau just behind. I expected him to be much farther back, but a couple of things are working for him. One, fourth line centers are often projected to be the young grinder type as fans try to retire the old guard as soon as possible. So much of his competition is the youth movement and not the guys who have really earned those spots yet. And by earned, I mean locked themselves into it. So quite a few of the names behind him are guys that are trying to earn more ice time and get into the league. That helps when I'm doing these rankings, because unless I'm looking at your AHL profile going, oh, you're going to launch yourself in the league, I'm largely putting you against an established guy who won more faceoffs than he lost. He's serviceable, played an important role in a penalty-killing unit, and was overall strong defensively at 5-on-5 while still putting up 22 points on the fourth line and played all 82 games. Obviously, 17th isn't impressive, but it certainly isn't as bad as I expected. I also don't expect Sean Corrali to actually be playing that role out of camp, but we will see. But so far, for your centers, you have 31st ranked Elias, not great, 13th for Zacha, 13th for Mitten, and 17th for Corrali. Something that you're certainly not upset about outside of your top line there. Let's move on to the right wings. We're actually making good time here. We'll cruise somewhat here. First line right wing. This was the easiest category to do. I barely even looked at it because our candidate is David Pastrnak. 77 games played, 29 goals, 71 assists for 100 points on the dot, a plus four, $11.25 million for five more years. Closest in the rankings is Kucherov and no one else. He ranks second. The only player I will reasonably put ahead of Pastrnak on that right side is Kucherov. Call me biased, but you can easily make the argument that no winger in the league does more with less. He is the only true top-line talent on the team, in my opinion, and somehow he continues to hit 100 points consistently. This section was a set-it-and-forget-it spot. There is no reason to overthink this. At worst, you're knocking him down a spot or two, but I'd like you to tell me the name that you're considering doing that for, because it's Kucherov, it's Pasta, it's a cliff, and then it's everybody else. That's how I feel about this. And that's in a year where he wasn't even going all out on the goal scoring. He was trying to elevate his line mates. Damn. Let's keep it moving. No way I'm getting a lot of arguments on that one. Second line right wing. According to Puckpedia, our candidate is Morgan Geeky. 81 games played, 39 goals, 29 assists, 68 points, a minus 5 plus minus. He gets 5.5 mil for five more years. A lot of fives. Closest in the rankings, oddly enough, Demidov and Nichushkin. Final ranking, Eighth. Second line right wing. I'll live with that all day. You're telling me you have two guys on the right side who rank in the top 10 at their positions? Oh, yeah! I've got him right behind Demidov and right in front of Nichushkin. But how crazy is it that you could only put seven guys ahead of Geeky? Right? So Demidov, the reason being is I expect another step forward, and yeah, that guy's going to be a baller. In no particular order, the seven guys ahead of Geeky. Marner, Nylander, Matthew Tkachuk, Gunther, Demidov, Tom Wilson, and Porter Martone. Porter Martone, I understand, might be a little controversial, but that guy has superstar written all over him to me, and I think he's going to be just fine. Geeky has turned into one of the premier scorers in the league. Even with a 22-game stretch where he scored two goals last year, he still finished tied for 16th in goals scored. Not for his position, across the league. He went 22 games with just two goals, and in the rest of the season, put up 37. Nutty. Obviously, you don't love the 22-game stretch where he wasn't doing it, but that's a different conversation. I feel very comfortable with this ranking. And obviously, as I'm doing when I introduce them and we're doing the scroll of other names up, I would say, go back, take a look, watch the names that go across and say, hey, would I reasonably put these guys past him? And then do a little deep dive, because one of the things that I really learned during this is I would make my preliminary, that feels about right, and then you got to dive into each of these players. And then you start to go, oh, shoot, okay, no, never mind. He's better than I thought. He's way worse, you know, stuff like that. As far as on-ice impact goes, again, really trying to ignore contracts. If you're talking about one of the best contracts in the league, though, Morgan Geeky has to come up. And I know that The Athletic every year does these best contracts things, and he didn't make it once again. But that's largely because they're looking at the guys who are severely underpaid and expected to score all of these goals. Geeky just keeps outperforming his expectations every year by such a margin that analytics sites are just broken when you're actually trying to plug him in. It doesn't make sense. Third line, right wing. A fan favorite here. Our candidate, according to Puckpedia, is Murat Huzhnidinov. 77 games played last year, 15 goals, 18 assists for 33 points, a plus 12, $925K RFA next summer. Closers in the rankings are Connor Brown and Jonathan Berggren. Final ranking, 20th. Damn. I wanted this to be higher, and I still think there's a lot of room for him to move way up. Surprisingly competitive, this position when you go through the names. Let's keep in mind one thing. I really have no belief that his 19% shooting percentage last year will continue. I've been wrong about those predictions before, and I understand that. But that being said, I do believe his numbers last year, as far as like goals scored and assists, can be improved upon by the way he attacks the game. Because he's about to really hit his prime. I think he's learned a lot of lessons over the past couple years, and I think his ceiling is a true middle six guy. I have him right behind Connor Brown and right above Berggren. Honestly, the middle rankings are a bit of a mess, especially with third and fourth line wingers. I have Roslovic below this position, and I'm betting some have him well into the upper half. So that's just a good example there. Still, 20th out of 32 in this category when a few years ago he was just trying to stay in the lineup for the Wild and not doing a great job of that. That's a win in my book. If his game really clicks in the next year or two, it's going to shock everyone in the league other than Bruins fans. Because I don't think there's a single one of us that truly doubts that this guy's going to do the work to reach the best version of himself. And he has the hands, he has the speed, he just doesn't have the size. He's getting there, though. I have a lot of faith in Huzhnikov, and I am really, really thinking that if I made this projection a year from now or 6 months from now, that he'd rank higher. So I don't want to be a negative Nancy with this, but I couldn't reasonably move him that much higher than that. Fourth line right wing. All right, let's have the Kastelic conversation. Our candidate, according to Puckpedia, is Kastelic. 12 goals, 10 assists, 22 points in 82 games played. Plus six. Everyone on that fourth line got 22 points. 140 PIMs. Let's keep that in mind. He makes 1.56 mil for two more years. Closest in the rankings, Malenstein, Toropchenko, and Jordan Greenway. Final ranking, 22nd. So I was a little too aggressive when I said that he ranked way behind Corrali at 17th. But 22nd was a bummer. This one shocked me. I had Malenstein right above him, Toropchenko and Greenway close behind. A few things seemed very clear while I was going through this list. Many of the depth chart names at fourth line right wing, I would consider third liners, which immediately skewed a good chunk of the top results. Beyond that, though, Kastelic's issues with the penalty box was something that I had to consider, and it broke a lot of ties and put him behind quite a few of his contemporaries. Also, a deeper look at his individual analytics revealed some pretty nasty stuff. So much so that I went back and looked at a bunch of his shifts on the season. And it's a good reminder, and it's worth remembering, that he started the season excellent. He was flying, but he really fell off in the back half of the year. So this was one of those wake-up moments for me on a player. I still love Kastelic, and I think he brings a lot to the Bruins that they really need. On his best days, he's a guy that you have to have in the lineup. He's a guy who makes your team competitive. He pulls you into the fight. But on his worst, there's a lot of warts here. And this got weird enough, especially with the projection of the other rosters, that it put him firmly in the bottom half of the league at his position. I know I'm going to get a lot of comments about this one. Look, I don't like it either. Go through the names, make some arguments. I'm absolutely all ears. I'd be surprised if you're getting him much higher than the early 20s, late teens, for sure. All right, to the left side, left wings, first line left wing. Our candidate, and they're likely right about this, J.J. Paterka, J.J. PDJJ, 25 goals, 22 assists, 47 points in 82 games played last year, plus six. 7.7 mil for four more years. Closest in the rankings, I had Barbashev and, oddly enough, DeBrusk. Final ranking, 25th. Okay, don't panic. Relax, calm, breathe, work with me. I understand what you're feeling. We gave up two firsts for this guy, and he ranks 25th at the position he's going to play? What the heck? Just hear me out for a minute. I've got him right above DeBrusk, right below Barbashev. A stagnant year of development, and his age 23 season is largely why he sits so low. last year could have kind of hoisted him further. The trade to get him was based on a couple factors that we've already covered, but a quick recap. He's still got a year or two of development left in him. He's cost-controlled for four more years. He can put the puck in the back of the net, and he improves our zone entries and possession ability in the defensive zone. If he is a high-end second-line winger, that trade is still worth it. All that being said, top-line standards are difficult to meet, and he isn't quite there yet. This is far more a insult to the Bruins' ability to bring in a true left-wing talent than it is on J.J. Paterka's game. J.J. isn't supposed to be a top-line guy, right? Second line, he would have ranked much better. Top 10? No, but much better than 25th. Because of the Bruins' lack of true high-end game changers, a lot of these guys are getting compared to players that they just have no chance going against. And again, if you look at the list that scrolls up when I announce it, you're going to have an easy time going, oh, yep, throughout. So it was a bit of a bummer to see him so low on this. I do think that there's plenty of room for growth for him to really launch past that. But I don't think he's suddenly the solution on the top line there. He does improve our top line, though. Because I can promise you, our second candidate here is not going to rank any better, or wouldn't rank any better in the top line. Second line left wing. Our candidate, according to Puckpedia, is Casey Mittelstadt. 15 goals, 27 assists for 42 points, a plus 12, 71 games played, 1 year left at 5.75 mil. Closest in the rankings for me were Perreault and Howden. Final ranking, 19th. I think this one feels right, honestly. Mittelstadt rebounded last year and had a successful season with the Bees. Moving to the wing was a big part of that. I was critical of him being a passenger on that line, but he was still part of one of the most analytically impressive lines in the league. I have Perreault just ahead of him based on last year's work and the probability that Perreault takes another leap next year. Howden right behind him, which feels weird, but I'm splitting hairs between them really right now. I don't think there's much reason to analyze this one to death. Mittelstadt was good last year, not great, and probably playing a line too high, but still, good. 19th feels just about right for him, especially when there are names like Forsberg and Hagel and Bratt in this category. Basically, the top five or six were guys that, those are top-line players. I don't know what they're doing in this category. Again, I'm just, evens out in the wash, I would say. Some players are going to move up and down, but it does give you a good idea of where the Bruins rank. And left side, so far, you're in the back half of the league. Speaking of, third line, our candidate, James Hagans, according to Puckpedia, and I, again, think they're probably right about this. 2 games played, 1 assist, plus 1 last year, 2 years left on his ELC. Closest in the rankings for me were Niederreiter, Kasper, Olofsson. Final ranking, 20th. Now, this is obviously all projection, and my hope is Hagans is a positive factor on both sides of the ice and finishes somewhere between 30 and 40 points. That would actually put him higher on this list, honestly. But I'm leaving some room for some growing pains. One of the largest blind spots of this exercise are rookies in general. Bottom six rosters will be in total flux to start the year as teams figure out who can stick and who needs more time in the lower leagues. If we can walk away from next season with Hagans being close to the middle of the pack at his position, I will absolutely take it. And I have him just a few spots behind that at 20th. If you were to get through this season and he ranks 14th, great. Great, that's positive development. That's a rookie year that you looked good on the third line and see if you can grow from there. Again, with Hagen's size and his play over the last couple of years, the hope there is he becomes a true top-line center. It's going to take some time, though. This is not the kind of talent that comes in and just celebrinis it up immediately, right? This is not a bad ranking. 20th for a rookie, I think, is pretty solid, and I genuinely believe that not only can he hit this, he can go higher. It's going to be a slow start for him, is my guess, and then we'll see him get more comfortable. Fourth line, left wing. Our candidate is Tanner Jeannot. 6 goals, 16 assists for 22 points, a minus 4 in 77 games played. 3.4 mil for 4 more years. Closest in the rankings to me was McBain. Final ranking, 23rd. Pointing some out here. The fourth line ranked 23rd, 17th, and what was the other one? 22nd? Yeah. I expected them to be so much higher. I really did. And I wanted to get him higher. He rebounded really well last year from some really rough years prior. Of course, he didn't come to Boston and suddenly become a goal scorer again, but 22 points larger than the fourth line, physical presence on the ice, strong penalty killing. I mean, that came really out of nowhere. Just felt like the kind of guy a champion wants in their bottom six, especially with how physical he is. That being said, this is the fourth line, and most of these guys can kill penalties and get rough on the ice, and with last year being a bit of an outlier, it was really hard to move him past the majority of guys on this list who do what he does, get a similar point total, and have been consistent year over year doing it. It's genuinely funny how much I loved our fourth line, and this line ranks, I mean, a line that scored 66 points combined. They rank towards the bottom of the league when you really dive into their individual play. Maybe this is a blind spot for me. I really think that there might be a possibility because they all rank so poorly. And maybe the projections for these fourth lines have too many third liners that are dipping down as Puckpedia projects some of these higher talented rookies to come in and take these third and second line places that they won't end up actually taking. I'm trying to find reasons for it because genuinely, analytically, that fourth line was really solid for huge portions of the season. They put up a point total that you're fine with. And they were aggressive and decent defensively. So it's surprised to see each individual rank as low as they do at their positions. I gotta think it's largely due to how I am doing this rather than just them compared to their peers. That being said, it doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies, I guess. Let's get to the defense. Top pair right defense. Obviously our best defenseman. Our candidate. Charlie McAvoy, 11 goals, 50 assists for 61 points in 69 games played with some real injury trouble through the year. Plus 13, 9.5 mil, four more years. Closest in the rankings, I have Sider and I have Fox. Final ranking, fifth. Seems that the Bruins fan base, you either love or hate McAvoy. There's not a lot of in-between there. I'm clearly on the love side by the ranking. But even I was actually surprised to have him this high. Ahead of him, I have Makar, Bouchard, Heskinen, and Sider, while I have Fox right behind him. That feels like a pretty obvious top six to me at this moment. McAvoy is this era's Krejci. Once he hit his prime and really locked in as the guy at his position, the franchise just couldn't find the guys to play around him. Krejci never had wingers, ever, and he was still a baller. And they can't find a top-tier talent at left defense for McAvoy. And when they do bring in a guy that they end up, you know, really liking and think that they're going to add something there, they end up spreading the talent around. And Hampus ends up on that second pair, or, you know, stuff like that. McAvoy does a lot without much support. I pretty much always expect him to be controversial for that reason, but this team would be in serious trouble without him. And when you go through the players on this top right side, it's pretty easy to see him in the top 10. Maybe you have him a few slots lower, but it's pretty easy to get him up this high. So I have him fifth. Second pair of right defense. Will Borgen. This is going to get nasty, guys, and I'm sorry. 5 goals, 10 assists, 15 points, a plus 5 in 75 games played for the Rangers last year, 4.1 mil for four more years. Closest in the rankings are Tony DeAngelo and Eric Chernak. Now, I want to point out that closest in the rankings doesn't mean similar play styles. Final ranking, 29th. Unfortunately, I don't get to bulldoze my way to positivity in this exercise like I did in the introduction video to Borgen. I still see a way for this trade to work out, obviously, and Borgen solidifying a second pair that badly needs it is a possibility. But where he ranks right now is a reflection of a really tough last year on a team that struggled across the board defensively. If we ignored last year, we may move him up, I don't know, about 10 spots, maybe 12. But there's so much concern with his game, especially with how last year went. And this exercise really highlighted that for me. I have him right behind Chernak, who also suffered a down year last year, and right above Tony DeAngelo, who is so bad defensively that his offense means nothing to me. This should not lead anyone to panic about this trade. There is a plan here. There is a roadmap to him being successful in Boston and really shoring up that second pair. But we are very much in the prove-it stage, and I wasn't willing to move him higher than this because I don't know yet. And I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, yeah, he'll be a top 12 guy. He's going to rebound. The arrow's pointing down. The Bruins are taking a gamble that it can point back up this year. But right now, there's not a lot of arguments to get him higher and compared to the players on this list. So this was a bummer. again, remember, I'm going into this with something in my head about where they probably rank, and it was not 29th. I'll tell you that much. Third pair of right defense. Our candidate, Henry Jokiharju. 41 games played. 2 goals, 13 assists, 15 points. Plus 2. Plus minus. 2 more years at 3 mil. Closest in the rankings, Brent Burns and Brandon Carlo. Again, just kind of funny that the past Bruins have shown up here. Final ranking, 11th. Might surprise you. So third pair right defense is a wasteland of replacement level players, the list of guys I had. I had to make a decision on whether I was going to lean into Jokiharju's serviceable underlying metrics or lean into how much this coaching staff clearly didn't want him in the lineup in the playoffs. I decided to go with the analytics, which I'm sure very much helped him. It leaves me very much higher than I expected. I have him right behind Brandon Carlo. Obviously very different players, but this stage of Carlo's career, there's a similar level of impact on the ice. And right above Brent Burns, as Burns' defensive game is all but gone, but his offense is still ahead of Jokiharju. I expect this position to be a bit of a revolving door this year. I'm not even sure if Jokiharju is on the Bruins by the end of August, let alone trade deadline. We have a lot to figure out here. That being said, third pair right defense is so bad across the league. Go through these names, man. It is nuts. And I also assume bottom pairs for defense, you're going to see most teams have 4 or 5 guys play there due to injuries or whatever through the year. So it's just a weird one to project. But 11th, I'll take it. I'll take it. And really, the underlying metrics were very good for Jokiharju. Again, I was so anti-Jokiharju and still largely don't love the player. But my goodness. My goodness. 11th. We take it. Top pair left defense. This is where Puckpedia really screwed us. Really screwed us. I don't have Aspero anywhere on this projection, right? I want you to know that Aspero would rank exactly where the guy currently ranks in this position. If Aspero were on this projection, though, and was a third pairing guy, as he really should be in the NHL, he's a 7th D, a 6th, 7th D. I know we really liked what he did last year. We're very proud of him. We're very impressed by him. But I am really going to be slow to come on board with him being a top 4 guy in the NHL. I just don't believe that. If he was compared to players that he should have been compared to, he would rank really well, probably 12th to 15th-ish when you get down to that third pair. Maybe higher, honestly. But I can promise you on the top pair, he ranks 32nd. I double-checked. Our candidate, because Puckpedia decided to screw us, Mason Lauri. 7 goals, 19 assists, 26 points in 73 games played, a plus 17 in plus minus. 1 year left at 3.2 mil, RFA this summer. He's actively being shopped. Closest in the rankings, no one. Final ranking, 32nd. By a mile. I know this one comes off harsh, but this is way more on Puckpedia than it is Lauri. He is nowhere close to a top pairing guy right now, but the team has consistently tried him with McAvoy, so Puckpedia really latched on to that. Them's the rules, right? But honestly, even if Lauri were compared to third pairing guys, his ranking still firmly sits in the lower half despite his offensive capabilities. I mean, Aspero, given what he did last year, would rank above Lauri, in my opinion. That's where we're at right now with this player. He ranks 32nd by so far. And remember, the reason that there's not a lot of right shot defensemen is because in the NHL, many defensemen in their training growing up to it, if they're right-handed, still shoot left. Many of them do because it's a stabilizing factor and all that kind of stuff. Left-handed defensemen, naturally left-handed defensemen, are obviously also going to shoot left because that's just what they've naturally grown up with. It's pretty rare that you're going to get them going the other way. And so you have this kind of weird thing where there's such a shortage of right-hand impact defensemen in the league. That means your top pair on the left side, that's a really competitive spot. All of these guys are so good. And you're comparing Lauri to them. 32nd. By a mile, 32nd. And of course, reminder, Aspero would also be 32nd. Second pair left defense. Our candidate, Hampus Lindholm. 67 games played, 5 goals, 21 assists, 26 points for plus 3, plus minus. 4 years at 6.5 mil remaining. His closest in the rankings are Dylan Sandberg and Marcus Peterson. Final ranking is 13th. Now, this is based on another step towards being healthy, an improvement upon last year. That's me being optimistic. That's where I currently sit. So if you want to force him lower, I think it's reasonable. I am projecting him to have a healthy season and to have a healthy offseason this year and really hit the ground running. 13th is pretty good considering he's had these really brutal injuries the past couple of years. He's still a top half of the league second pair guy who does a lot to keep the puck moving towards dangerous ice, and it doesn't always show up on the score sheet. And due to pockets of last year being extremely frustrating, particularly in the defensive zone, I think we've all gone a little too far on the Hampus criticism. We've taken this, the pendulum swung just too deeply. He's a positive impact player on both sides of the ice. And a fully healthy offseason hopefully reminds everyone of that this season. Third pair left defense, I know you know the name, our guy Nikita Zadorov. 2 goals, 20 assists, 22 points for plus 18 in 81 games played, 4 more years at 5 million. I believe he had 100 billion penalty minutes, something like that, led the league once again. Closest in the rankings, I've got Kulikov and Romanov. Final ranking, 14th. This ranking benefited highly from being compared to third-pairing guys, which, like the right side, albeit not quite as bad, but is filled with replacement-level guys. I even had him significantly higher on this list, actually, and realized I wasn't taking into account the amount of time he spends in the penalty box, which felt unfair, especially considering I knocked Kastelic down a few spots for that. I have him sitting just behind Romanov and just ahead of Kulikov, but pretty interchangeable, in my opinion. I'm not about to lose sleep here. He gets paid like a second-pairing guy, and you'd want him firmly in the top 10 when being compared to other third-pair players, but we have to come to terms with this being a contract that is so much, that is as much about his play as it is about his physicality in a playoff series. And whether that's worth it or not is in the eye of the beholder. I am hopeful with Zadorov. I liked a lot of what he did while he was on the ice last year, except for the penalties. I don't think we're ever going to get a version of him that doesn't take those penalties. I really don't. This has been such a talking point for the 2 years that he's been here. 2 years that he's been here? Yeah, 2 years. That it hasn't changed at all. It hasn't improved. So you just got to imagine, like, this is just who he is and who he's going to be. But when he is on the ice in shutdown situations late in games, I like having him on my team. And I think this is a pretty fair ranking for him at 14. Goaltenders. This is a little harder. Swayman was easy, though. The backup goaltending was difficult. Our candidate for starting goaltender is Jeremy Swayman. 55 games played, 31 wins, 908 save percentage, 2.71 goals allowed average, 2 shutouts, 8.25 mil for the next 5 years. Closest in the rankings are just the guys above him, which is Sorokin, Shesterkin, Thompson, Vasilevsky, and Hellebuck. I have him ranked 6th. Pretty similar to Pasta, you'd be hard-pressed to find a player who does more with less support. Swayman has spent the last 2 seasons getting absolutely shelled by a Swiss cheese defense in front of him. Despite that, he put up strong numbers last year and finished 3rd in Vezina voting. This ranking is as truthful as it is hopeful. Not many will argue with what Sway did last year, but this franchise literally needs him to continue playing at a Vezina level if they're going to maximize the Pasta and McAvoy primes and lead this retool back to a contender status. If Swayman's play dips, the whole season goes under. Period. That is not anything but the truth there. So, let's hope he is who I think he is. Backup goalie, our candidate, Michael DiPietro. A .930 save percentage, 1.91 goals allowed average in 45 games played last year in the AHL. Also awarded the AHL MVP last year. I didn't put any closest in the rankings because that didn't really make sense to me as we haven't really seen him play at the NHL level. Final ranking, 23rd. I didn't give who he's close to because this is a total crapshoot. I have been told ad nauseum by hockey minds that I often trust that DiPietro is not the answer in the NHL. He will not thrive in the NHL and that the things that he does poorly will prevent him from having success up here. That has been a fairly consistent message I've received from not people close to the team, but people who have watched him a ton and study the lower leagues. I've been on the side of giving him a chance, mostly because he's blowing up the AHL. You just kind of have to do your due diligence and see if it works at the next level. Obviously, last year at camp, he was so bad that it kind of ruined his shot. But he's coming off another stellar season in the AHL, and his competition for backup just got traded. What we are hoping for is somewhere around average backup play. That puts him right around 23rd. And I understand that math doesn't check out. But about a half dozen teams have 1As, 1Bs. So you're really starting the backup title at around 7 or 8, not at number 1. So that does still lead us to right around 23rd. I guess the message I'm kind of trying to put out here is backup goaltending should not be considered a strength until we actually see how Mikey can do at this level. I'm comfortable with this ranking at this time. So now I'm going to put just a little blurb up here to give us the summary of what we've just done, which is we rank going from the left side to the right all the way down the roster. 25th, 31st, 2nd for our top line positions. 19th, 13th, 8th for our second line. 20th, 13th, 20th for our third. 23rd, 17th, 22nd for our fourth. 32nd, 5th for our top pair. 13th, 29th for our second pair. 14th, 11th for our third pair. 6th in net and 23rd in backup. This project was so helpful in allowing me to define why I am concerned about the high level of variance that you'll get this year. Every conversation we had leading into last year's season about you can see the best case scenario, you can see the worst case scenario, and there's a huge amount of distance between them. You can have that conversation right now too. Because while you have these high level talents, a few of them, almost everyone else is middling to back half of the league at their position. Now you've got to make these arguments that Hagans and Kuznetsov and Minton all take steps forward, and it becomes a very different situation, right? Paterka, by the end of the season, you wouldn't consider him 25th at his position, right? These are guys that have the ability to take that step and to make this team better. Every single fan base is saying a very similar thing about their team, unless they are truly, okay, we're already superstar contender status, or we are going for DuPont, you know? So I am nervous. In no way am I going to let this bleed in to make me negative about what we get this year, because this team has continued to surprise me year after year with the way they stick around in these battles. But yeah, there's a real roadmap for this not being a great season. It's just a roadmap for it being really good too. I will say that by the time I was done with this, I'm like, okay, contending status is so far. Like, this is another year where they have to find a couple of moves that really change the landscape. And a couple of these prospects really have to hit if we're going to get back into cup contention before Pasta ages out. You know, like this is not the season where they bounce back quite yet. And that wasn't the plan, really, is to immediately be right back there. But I think they were hoping for more of a step forward than they got. That Elias contract will continue to just be such a problem. 31st for your top line center is the most damning thing. Because even when you talk about your top pairing left side being 32nd, Hampus and Zadorov are there to jump up and take minutes. And while they won't rank highly there, they certainly wouldn't be dead last. Whereas Lauri or Aspro, just they're not going to be difference makers on a top pair like that. Anyway, that's what we've got. I hope you enjoyed. This was a fun project. A lot of work went into this. And it's funny, I always do all this work for it, and they seem like such simple videos. So, I don't know. But I appreciate all of you guys. I can't wait to really ramp back up into the season and start making content more consistently again. And I've already got a couple of things before the season that we're working on. So, love you all, and go Bees. Go Bees!